staying along until the very end. I guess it wasn't very long, but I think we brought a lot of people together from Southern Ontario. Around, I think by my count, there were 15 different people who are interested in working on echoes or are starting to work on echoes. I've been working on echoes, or maybe starting up working on echoes. So I think it would be good to, it's good that we all kind of know what everybody else is doing. So I think the only, didn't even prepare anything. I mean, everyone is here, so I was just thinking whether we could just make a list of issues that we should kind of go back home thinking about and maybe work on. If someone is interested in doing something and then needs, maybe needs other people to help them with, or maybe problem that they want to work on next and then someone else wants to join them. So these are kind of the kind of issues that I just wanted to list them, so that maybe this could kind of spark new directions, new collaborations, or just new things to think about. So, and I'm gonna ask everyone to say at least one thing. At least one thing.
I know.
Why are you asking?
I said one thing.
I didn't specify anything. Okay. So, what do you think?
Well, yes. There was that idea that we were discussing over lunch when doing the career and quick work search for post-mortem QT.
So, okay, so it's a bunch of so coherent bank first. So, do you want to explain what this is?
So, I'm not too familiarized with that, but there are some papers using this coherent wave-burst technique that they only assume the frequency with dependence on the source to look at, to look into data. So I think that it's a nice way to extend what Bob Holden did, and we could use for Boltzmann effectivity with the proposal that Niash Naritaka had that I used in my results here.
Right, so the this pipeline is already, I guess, publicly available. So the question is, can we adopt it? Do you look for echoes? Or let's go Boltzmann echoes, I guess.
I think that there was one group that used it, but they use it for constant reflectivity.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
This group?
I have to look it up, but...
Mm-hmm. Okay, there's something to... Okay, I'm not aware of that. So it's something that I guess we none of us know too much about, but it is one of the things that one of the... So LIGO has a few different ways of looking for signals, and the more famous one are these template banks where he kind of has some GR, they have GR templates and look for the one that fits the data. But another one is this coherent wave burst search that looks kind of particular localized in time and frequency. This you don't hear too much about, but in fact, there are some events that are discovered only using this and not the other one. These are things, and it's not quite clear why exactly. But maybe because the template banks aren't completely. Are incomplete, don't have everything, or maybe because they're actually finding echoes. So this is something to look at, I guess that's an interesting. Okay, so good. Oh,
so I'm off.
Yeah, okay. You could say more than one thing, but a minimum one, yes.
You and Bob should agree with each other.
Okay, so like, do you have any particular strategy to...
Yeah, you guys should each do each other's calculation.
I see.
Or calculate something where you have to agree.
Okay. So
in the sense of rather than calculating different things.
Between Bob and the others. Well, I mean, technically, it's not that we disagree, we have done different things, and yeah, so should we, so how should we do? Should we, The problem is that whenever I talk to Bob, is Bob has this ways of saying this is the right way to do things, and I could see that.
You're interested because you're the right way.
Yeah, I think I have the right way.
Tell him the right way.
Yeah. So I think we should just start from some first principles that what we think is the right way. I think the way Bob does it is, I said, he looks at his models with Gaussian wave packets. I said, okay, so this looks like a bunch of triangles in frequency space, so I benefited with a bunch of triangles in the frequency space.
But so one way to approach that would be is actually it's a virtue that you're not doing the same technique, but if you calculate the same physical thing and get the same answer.
Right, that's fair enough, right. So that's a good point. So it will be two A different methods. Or can different methods find the same parameters? So like for example, delta T echo, is there any other parameter or the number of echoes, I guess what we call number of echoes.
The amplitude of the echoes?
The amplitude.
But are we getting closer to deciding on what is the thing we're looking for?
Well, I think actually what Craig is suggesting is that we could use our own methods. You have your own method and I can use my own method.
Do we agree that we're looking for an evenly spaced resonance method?
Well, that's the thing we don't agree on. But
it's not evenly spaced?
No, I guess no, we can agree on that. That would be something else I was going to mention. That what is the... Right, so we can... So there are really two ways to go about it. First is that we may not agree on what we're looking for, but we may still measure some parameters that are kind of fundamental to the echoes, like the spacing of echoes. And could we find the same parameters even though we're using different methods? So that would be reassuring. Now the other question is, should we agree on the best way of looking for echo? I mean,
well, we both agree there is a spectrum and it is evenly spaced.
Right.
And I just don't think many people are thinking about the best way to look for such a simple sounding thing.
Mm-hmm. So,
I don't even know what a coherent wave is.
That's the problem. It's not clear whether it's the same thing. But
following up that thought, if there's a simple thing that you guys agree is there, then what will convince other people is that if you both approach it, they're looking for it, and you find it in the same way, then that'll be a sign that it was really there and wasn't a corruption of what you asked.
Right. There's just so few people looking for evenly spaced.
But if you two in particular who are,
no,
could agree.
So far only one person.
Right now, I mean
it's one of them.
Yeah, we did it with binary neutron star and Petra is, that's what Petra is doing. Now so whether we should extend it. So I guess I think the question I have is that the optimal way, or maybe ways, find evenly spaced peaks in frequency. Is that what you say?
Yeah.
So, and I think, yeah, so not many people have done this.
Not many people are even thinking of a good way to do this.
So how can we convince people to think about
and
it?
Well, if you can go think about it and you find the same thing in the data, that will convince a lot of people to think about it. But if it sounds like the what you find is a function of what you ask for, then no one will be interested because they'll ask that.
What do you mean the function of what you ask for?
Well, because the I think the criticism people would have is that if you kind of look at noisy data long enough, you're looking for patterns, you'll find one. But
mm-hmm.
It's just going to be a function of what you were looking for. But it might not be really there. And so,
mm-hmm.
so that if you want to convince people there's something really there, if you guys agree what you're what the thing is you're looking for, and then you can agree on that you found it, then that's kind of fairly convincing that the data is telling you something rather than you guys looking for something.
Yeah, so I think the problem is that we haven't really looked in the same range of parameter space to even be able to confirm whether we find
it. But that's a technical mistake, I think.
Yeah.
That's what your goal is, right? Your goal is to get a lot of citations later on when it's all found to be true and you're doing the right thing, but you want to move the field forward.
Okay. So this is actually, so I guess I agree on 3.3, I agree on the range, the search range, I guess. Okay, so that's I guess good. So what else?
What happens if at some point we agree that there are echoes?
Well, now you don't agree.
So what are you gonna, how would this influence your research?
Well, I think my research probably is the least of your concerns in the sense that I might not have an impact either way, but you say it's the LIGO people's interest that you're gonna really influence, right?
No, I'm beyond that. They agree there are echoes.
Oh,
you say if they agree that.
Yeah, everyone agrees there are echoes.
When that happens, right?
Okay. How will that affect theorists?
That'll be the question that you can get. What's the does there exist a robust model that predicts that?
Yeah. So how are you going to think about that?
I think we could help with that maybe if we would map that into the EFT space, right? So if you say these are the echoes and then we say, okay, this is the RD scale response to that. And then your UV model would have to map onto that, so it would be
well,
in that space, right?
But some level, our parameterization now is just really just a rewriting of the fact that there's a reflection coefficient. You want to know kind of what, if you really are seeing something, what's the rest of the effective theory? What are the other things that could have been there that are less robust that might be model specific, right? And then, you know, can you actually make something more predictive?
Right now, you say the theory space is at zero size.
Not anymore.
The fundamentals here are theory space, yeah.
But if they actually exist, then you're going to have to modify that.
Yeah, I'm completely. My Bayesian update will be happening fast.
No, but then how will you come up with what's going on?
Well, depending on what the evidence was that convinced me to do the Bayesian update.
So I think I'm trying to see what part of this conversation.
Bayesian model skills never grow.
Never.
Are there analog echoes?
Analog echoes.
A different theory where you have some kind of echoes like that, and then people can derive an intuition for echoes by thinking about
dynamics
or sound
like
waves or
something
like that. Yes.
Okay.
I mean, I know people that work with analog pair of echoes in like a drain of water.
Yes.
I don't know how they would mimic echoes there, or even if they could.
Right?
Instead of water, putting some fluid, viscosity in the fluid?
It doesn't have to be an analog black hole, analog echoes.
Yeah, so that's the point.
Well, this is echoes and analog black holes.
But it could, it doesn't have to be a black hole because there are no black holes. So it would be an analog system that has echoes in some way.
But that's what Raval analog echo, wow.
You know what I mean. Leave it like that. It's fine.
Okay. We need a new word. A new word, right? It's
but this
yeah.
would be some good idea if you put viscosity fluid there. See what happens. In an analog model, like
is
that.
It the same with convolution?
I have no idea, but in my, I know the guy to ask, but I don't have the answer.
So we're also thinking that if you go to the, if you look into the analog graph, we have this black hole structure, and which when you go back into the back to time, you will get this high frequency, which is not the microwaves. Then if you like add like say viscosity and any like extra like degree of freedom from this microphysics, it might lead to echoes. We're thinking to calculate, but hasn't.
The variation on that thing would be you try to make an analog fuzz buffer. You just have some sort of a system where you have a density of states, but you make the density of states increase dramatically locally in some space.
Mm-hmm.
And then see if you scatter them, that if that works in any way, like a dipole.
But what kind of system can you think that you could do that?
I don't know, that's the research part.
So, I mean, this is actually related to the talk that Christian was giving yesterday, because so he was trying to understand this in from the DSCFP point of view. And then there, the idea was that there would be another official system, the CFT basically, or to some CFT estates that could exhibit echoes. So,
you have to have qubits, have a bunch of qubits that are localized in space and put a shitload of them at one spot.
Mm-hmm.
And then scatter things from them.
Right. So I guess you say qubits, right? CFT qubits. Right.
So actually, I'd just like to add a few things to Bobby that it seems that the most promising systems would be nearly maximally chaotic as far as saturating the off-off.
Saturating,
they should be chaotic systems.
Right.
Some large and chaotic systems.
Probably. Maximally chaotic systems? Or?
Yeah, something or maybe nearly maximally chaotic.
Yeah. Maximally chaotic. I wanted to come back to what this discussion about the theory, because I think this is still very what is the theory that gives you echoes? I guess Bob has his own quadratic gravity debate. I got into this, some of you know, as trying to explain dark energy. And I mean, I know everybody has their own preference, the people who think about this DFR random structure. So the question is, I mean, can we actually, if we do see echoes, can we agree which of these possibilities, if any of them, are responsible?
We produce different predictions.
Well, yeah, so how do we go about making predictions for any of these models?
In principle, we can do a catalog of the differences that we can account. For instance, the Boltzmann reflectivity, as I have been seeing, there is a suppression of the super radiant frequency.
Mm.
And that's why I'm thinking about, I'm seeing the smaller amplitude. So this is one feature that it's there for this reflectivity, but not necessarily for constant reflectivity. So we could do a catalog of the differences of features that we can look into the data or...
Right. So I guess that seems like maybe another way of putting this is that if you want to connect this to fundamental theory, can we compute reflectivity out of omega for different say quantum black hole models? And I think very few people who actually think about quantum black holes do this. I mean, or they just say it's zero. So I say that nothing comes out. But yeah, so this is, I'm trying to figure out how this is related to the, so this is the kind of thing that in principle we can measure from the data. But then I'm wondering whether it's EFT, effective field theory, tells us anything about this. I mean, can you say there would be some expectations for this half-hatched dependent frequency? You guys just ignore the frequency dependence. And that's the thing is actually measurable in principle. So what do you think?
So make that dimensionless. Omega divided by what's the scale?
Well, I mean, it's depends. I mean, I think the mana scale, because they are very high energy skills, but the lowest scale you have is a Hawking temperature. And in all these calculations we have done, it looks like that's the scale that comes in. It's you want omega divided by TH. So
the picture isn't that everything's going to be at very high scales. It really is physics happening at the scale of the horizon. New physics.
But you mean on a large scale? No, I mean these things, like the kind of thing that Van Zen was talking about. The new physics happened. I mean, quite a new physics happened on the scale of electron mass. But of course, what happens? Everything gets blue shifted as you approach the horizon. So the new physics, just the blue shifted effect, converts basically the high energy scale to the scale of Hawking temperature. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Not really, because to me that says that the blue shifting is, so if I hover above black hole, I'm, you know, my rockets are going like crazy. That's where all the energy is digested. So it's all about the observer doing something weird. The person that fell in just fell in, right? And so there's a lot of energy involved in that. So,
well,
so,
that is observer dependent, but of course we are observers who are sitting at infinity. So that would be, we are the relevant observers.
This is where having a good model would help.
That's right.
In the sense that you're writing functions down is kind of less informative than having some sort of sense as to what the scales of the problem are and how that controls what kind of dependence we're allowed to have. It's true that effective field theory will not have anything to say about something if the scales involved are as long as the horizon size. It will be hard to, your basic tool of organizing things and powers of small scales rather than the horizon size is going to fail.
I'm not advocating that the scales are a scale of horizon size, but is the intuition I have from the point of view of observer at infinity is that as you approach the horizon, you have this infinite blue shift, and that makes. Now, you're right that if an observer who's falling in, it doesn't see that, but that's not the relevant observer. So we are the relevant observer.
But we're not hovering, we're infinity, right? We're not
well, right, but we don't see what's falling into the, we don't see inside the horizon, right? So that our relevant patch is outside the horizon.
To profit from that blue shift, I think you need something where you actually care that somebody was hovering really close to the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
That's the person that sees the huge energy. And so if you're asking a question that doesn't have that person in it, then it's hard to see why that blue shift is going to be relevant.
It's hard to see, but is it impossible to see?
It might be true, but it's hard to see.
I mean, certainly this is the picture that, I mean, these fuzz ball states, the idea is that they are, they are not necessarily observable. So, I mean, this is what Samir Mathur's picture is, that if you have big observers falling to the horizon, doesn't necessarily think anything as special. But the real thing is that this superposition of these hot fuzz ball states that are different from the standard horizon. I guess what I'm saying is that. That's just a conjecture, if you will. I'm saying there are some people who think that picture could be different, even though, I mean.
Making any one picture concrete would be useful. And that would be like in the spirit of the analog fuzzball. If you take any one of these very vague ideas and say, here's a concrete thing which we think captures the essence of what that's supposed to be doing, and that we can actually then do calculations with a test, that would be really great. Doesn't have any fuzzballs to begin with.
So, okay, so any concrete model.
Yeah. What happens if you have a massless field localized at a spot and it's interacting with a field that can travel everywhere? But that's a subject that's a whole bunch of degrees of freedom all at one spot. Is there any way you can kind of make that into a full model of something which is got a lot of.
If you have a point particle, you say?
No, just I have a field, like a brain. If I localize the field on a brain, but the brain is like a point. So I've got some field that's living at a point. And I just want to have a lot of degrees of freedom localized at that point to be kind of like a fuzzball.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see if I start hitting that with lots of other things, is it going to look like a black hole in any sense?
Okay, so this is kind of a toy fuzzball.
It doesn't have to be fuzzball. Any of these kind of very hand wavy pictures of a black hole, can any of them be made precise in any way?
Right. With a lot of degrees of freedom, a lot of localized degrees of freedom.
I described the two people yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And so in what sense is that not well defined?
So that is, so Chris, do you know what this two two hole is?
I have to look at the look at your talk and then back to you guys. It's just I'm very skeptical about anything that has gravity in it that really control of the calculations around it is really hard to do. I know you have high curvatures. I know you thought about it, so you might have solved it, but I know it's hard. So I kind of one of those things that it could just be an anchor.
Yeah, so in, I mean, I can answer that. I know, I guess, Cliff is too Canadian. But I can tell you, I'm Iranian, I don't mind. I mean, you haven't actually solved the gravitational perturbations. You solved the scalar wave equation. And gravity has higher curvature. So let's say two holes, gravity wave perturbations in two holes. And then of course because you have higher curvatures, you have all these higher derivatives, and the question is in this inhomogeneous background, do they have instabilities? Because this is why people do worry about having these higher curvature tend, because there will be Ostrogradsky instabilities.
You're saying even at the classical level, you're saying there's an issue.
Yeah, I mean classical, because this is, I think the idea is, I mean, if you have an inhomogeneous background, you could have instabilities for long wavelength perturbation. So because they have positive and negative energy modes, even classically, there must be instability if you have positive and negative energy modes, and you could have arbitrary positive and arbitrary negatives, right? So,
I don't know what you're worried about, yeah.
Hmm?
If you have a story about that itself.
Yeah, even awkward.
Yeah.
But then,
just so I'm not that clear, that your claim is that you have a theory where you have fluid gravity, higher curvatures, you have control over all the normal directions, and you have no instability issues. That's your
claim.
In the quantum theory. It's not like it's a strong couple thing and you don't know if there's a problem. You actually know there's no problem. Okay, so I'll see your talk. That sounds like a very interesting talk.
based on what we've learned from QCD.
Yeah, but see that's what makes me worry a little bit. That strong interactions, you know, can hide a lot of things and maybe they can do nice things, but it's a different thing from. So what I want to make sure you're not doing is saying that there's a black box you don't understand, and maybe that'll solve the instability problem. That's different than saying that we know that we solve the instability problem because we can control it, even though it's not acceptable.
Well, we don't know that we solve the confinement problem in QCD, but that doesn't bother either of us too much.
Because we have a lot of experiments about it, yeah, but we don't have that for gravity. So you're making this the same claim for gravity.
Yeah, it's a reasonable claim.
Well, that's where reasonable might differ, right?
Well, no, you're saying it's not reasonable.
No, I'm not saying either way.
Be working on
I'm skeptical about it, but I'm very prepared to be convinced. But I want to know what your statement is of what I should be convinced of. And it sounds like you're saying that you think you have control over a calculation that involves strong coupling, which solves what would be naively the problems of instabilities. And it's not just that strong coupling could solve it, but that you think it does solve it.
Well, I know the way. I know where the problem ends up. It doesn't end up as an instability. It ends up as a slight acausality.
And that's better, you think?
That's better. Especially when the time scale is the point.
But in the end of
the day. And the state involved is also unstable. So if, I think you even asked this. Okay, well, what happens at energy is much higher than points. The analog that QCD is asking at the LHC, why don't we worry about the sigma meson of QCD? So it's something like the sigma meson in this gravity theory has this strange property. And I'm just saying, for most other questions in the theory, like something going on at super Planck and scattering energies or something, the sigma or the analog of the sigma doesn't play any role.
So, but officially we know it does play the role. Do you know what the analog is pretty well?
Yeah, that's super planking and energies, then you can use the naive degrees of freedom, which are the gravitons. So there is a perturbative gravity, just like there's a perturbative QCD.
And there's no instability problem there.
Instability has turned into this strange looking sigma, like, you know, very broad resonance that has a certain strange property. But it's not the instability.
Yeah, I kind of feel that I was a lawyer's answer.
Okay, so I think one thing I mentioned maybe just to chip at this problem is that here we have both gluons and lattice. Because I mean there is confinement for QCD, but QCD doesn't have any ghost. So if you have a theory with a ghost, that you could put a lattice and say, show that somehow lattice, because everything is well defined, just everything that you can tackle in a lattice, then I guess that could actually help with this. Do you agree?
Yes.
But another thing is that you don't actually have two holes in quantum, quadratic gravity. You have two holes in classical quantum gravity, or classical quadratic gravity. So I guess the other thing is black holes. I mean, how can we compute, or how can you go about black holes in quantum? I guess I can write it. These colors in quantum. So, because quantum quadratic gravity is what you claim is the theory that's good and is your recomposition of PR, but the classical, I mean, but the solutions you're really looking at are classical solutions. So,
because this quantum gravity is like quantum QCD in the sense that both in the UV and the IR you have weak descriptions.
But then there's a transition.
There is a transition, but in the solution that you're talking about, it's some gel that has something going on. But for most of the rest of the whole solution, it's well described.
So can we do this using a membrane? Like if there's a shell where we don't understand what's going on because the classical theory breaks down, can we use a membrane? So that's, I think this is an idea one can pursue, is that in addition to, so you have your matter, but maybe more appropriate thing would be a membrane, because that's where we don't actually understand the equations. So you basically something like, here you have, I guess, C squared plus R squared, and outside you have Einstein. And then here you want to have a membrane, right, where you match them.
The reason it's in space, you can draw
that? Yeah, so because this is the picture that Bob has, and it says that in the high curvature regime, your theory is asymptotically free, because it's wild gravity. And far away, it's low curvature, it's just Einstein plus corrections. But then there is this a strong coupled regime where you go from this to this. And
what's at the horizon? Is
that, yeah. But somewhere near the horizon, I think. Yeah. Well, I mean, there is no horizon, right? So, but yeah. So, of the order of the close to the horizon would have been, right? But if you want to do it properly, because this would be a strongly coupled, you cannot do a classical calculation. You should be.
Can you predict where that radius is?
Well, you know where the curvature is good, order one.
It doesn't have to be order one, right?
Order one is like it. So, if I have a really, really big black hole where the curvatures are actually small on the horizon.
They're turning on and as you go in. You deviate from Schwarzschild, just Planck like outside the living horizon. Inside that, everything's changing from Schwarzschild.
Is there a calculation?
Well, I can get the curvature anywhere, possible solution.
Oh, so you have a solution where the solution then does something funny at the what would have been the horizon.
So I think just to clarify this, the reason Bob gets his solution is that he wants to have this funny boundary condition at the center that you don't necessarily want, I mean, other people don't necessarily insist on, but he says that he wants to have no horizon, basically, and instead at the origin you have this R squared, basically metric as some R squared boundary condition. So then there is a basically, that fixes the solution. Otherwise, I mean, Schwarzschild's black hole is also a perfectly good solution. It just doesn't satisfy the boundary condition that he wants.
Your point seven was you're worried about the stability analysis.
Yes, there's a stability, but also, I mean, it's also just a classical thing, a question that is solving. But really, if you believe the correct theory is the quantum one, then you don't even trust the classical stability analysis.
So what stops the membrane from moving? Why does the membrane fall across the horizon?
That's a good question.
You've got the membrane. I haven't ever mentioned the membrane.
But effectively, you've got a lot of stress energy that's localized in a small skin, right? So it would sound like membrane.
No. The curvature is just smooth. They get larger and larger. Get to the origin. So you can kind of calculate the action of this solution that it's actually finite. You know, finite action. Even though the curvature, some curvature, the variants are blowing up at the origin.
So you have a naked singularity by the end of the day.
A naked singularity, yes. But finite physical quantities.
And there are gradients, so you said that something happens with finite life, but either there's something which is varying over a finite scale. So you've got derivatives that are enormous there.
But the curvatures are not enormous.
So whose derivative is enormous?
There are some, if you look at the curvatures on a log scale, you can see some structure right there. But everything is still much less than one,
like
units. And you go in about 10% of the radius, and then finally you get order one.
You get order one curvature. I mean, you say they're small, they're probably not very small, right? So. That is still probably maybe another 10 to the minus 2 or so.
So
I think what I mean by membrane is that you have a strong coupling. So there's some region where you have big coupling, and there's a strong coupling. So some you have to do something about that region. And right now, if you just assume it's classical, that's what I meant by. So I want to hear from like more junior people here. Some have like been very, very silent. Or more senior people have been very silent. Okay.
People that I think the supermassive black holes and echoes.
Okay, good.
So
this is 10 supermassive echoes and supermassive black holes.
So the only thing that I have seen people talking about, it's not exactly echoes per se, but there is a work, I guess, from, I think they're Scott Hughes. And Paolo Pani, that they have like they impose a boundary condition, reflective boundary condition at the horizon, and they look for tidal disruption, tidal heating. Sorry, so they find a dephasing of the waveform due to this reflective boundary condition, basically because your spiral will move differently, but I don't know how this reflect on echoes. Because they are just looking at dephasing the spiral phase.
You're not talking about supermassive.
Well, that's they're doing that in stream mass ratio, so it's in supermassive black holes.
I think there's at least there are some exactly about these observations.
Yes.
Think, right?
Yes.
So, yeah. And I think there are also echo papers on this using these observations. Yeah,
but,
by Pani company.
But isn't the if you're talking about LISA anyway, the echoes would be way off the LISA frequency band, right?
For supermassive black holes?
Well, they are not expecting to see the ring down in LISA, right? They expect to get the ring down, the spiral,
right,
and then follow up the ring down in LIGO if they can see, but I don't think that
okay.
In LISA they would see echoes.
So I feel there's some literature on this. Okay, so LISA, and then also there's pulsar timing arrays.
So I guess it's something to think about. Oh, no one has talked about. I thought that this was looked at, but if it's just tidal heating, then the question is this either one to do something with that cause. Okay.
So I mentioned these periodic bursts that are coming out of these not quite supermassive black holes.
Yeah, actually, can you tell us? Okay, I don't think I recognize this. What is that?
It corresponded to a size of a black hole that had a 9-hour time delay. That's what, if you wanted to interpret it as.
This is the best star. Is it X rays or what? But some electromagnetics
as
well. This is periodic.
Yes.
And
very,
it's
very sharply, very regular.
Okay.
And it just happened that if you calculate the echo time given the mass, it roughly agrees.
Right, right.
That's some astrophysical observation of one object.
They call it some intermediate mass black hole, so 10 to the 5 solar mass.
How did they observe this object?
You said it was a nature paper?
Yeah, it's a nature paper.
So can you look it up? Okay. Yeah. And these are electromagnetic echoes, or somehow. Yeah. Okay, so if you could look it up, I can just type that in. Maybe you could look at it. Anyone else? Younger people?
I could display it there.
Oh, yeah, sure. Let's switch to.
Oops. Oh, yeah. Okay. GSM. I have to re-enter a number.
It says 3302. Are you connected? Maybe you have to open sources again.
What do I do?
Oh, 3302, yeah. And then again, you should go to mirror display and do that again. I think that could show why. Oh, it just changed. 9269. I don't know. Keep changing it just in case people try to hack that system and steal that echo template. What happened?
She's entering this one.
669. Oh, not nine. Okay. Right, okay. If I now wrap up this one. This is X-ray, right? So this is quasi-periodic oscillations are kind of interesting because I think a lot of accreting systems show them and they are at lower frequencies and they're usually thought as something happening in the disk, which it has lower frequencies the farther out you go. I mean, because it's just the Keplerian frequencies are smaller. But then why it happens at some frequency, I guess I don't think people exactly understand.
Well, you can correlate that frequency with the mass of the black hole.
Yeah.
If there's a good relation, then it's like all related. And if it's all over the place, then it's probably good.
It's I think that there's kind of a zoology of these. There are various like high frequency QTOs and low frequency QTOs, and they're all somehow related to the backwards frequencies, but then
I also think there are a lot of them. So but this one I don't know. So can you make it just, is there a reference here, the first author maybe? I can actually do teacups. Is that the actual title of the paper?
I mean, you have to tell us that is a good actual paper, right?
I see. In the OT.
Slightly more serious title.
Yeah.
And it said, what year is it? I don't see a year.
What are you looking for?
The year, I just wanted 2019, okay. Okay. Something to look at, of course. I mean, this would be right, but I mean, do we expect echoes in X-rays?
But if you say there's a lot of these, then easy to check whether it matches up.
Yeah, I mean, I think actually remember once look at this, and the thing is that some are very low frequencies, some are very high frequencies. I think it's just the whole zoo of various QPO frequencies.
But there's a whole wide range of masses. So.
Not very, not for a stellar black hole. I mean, the one that I was looking at for a stellar black hole. Now, this is a bit unusual because you say it's an intermediate mass black hole, which is not quite. I guess it's really. Do they specify the mass? Do you see the mass of the black hole?
No, they don't seem to like any of that.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay, so it's something to look at. So anyone else? Petra, do you want to say something? No? Mm-hmm. Anything that is stood out? Having
I think we can compare to our result and like Bao Yi's result with Louis's result.
Oh yeah, good. The comparison, so this is kind of one of those low-hanging fruits, comparison of Gwyneth, also, are you talking about this hybrid model or
this
the EOB model?
So, I think both. Like I think that we can compare between EOB and hybrids, and then the EOB we are using is I think it's similar to what Louis, and so we can also compare it.
Great, and Louis says, you have a name for your model? Orbital echoes. I don't know. Okay, so just comparison. Is that something easy to do? Okay, so I guess 10 more minutes. Any other suggestions, last thing? So what I'm gonna do is that I'm gonna take a picture of these or maybe just compile a list and then send I mean, I have an original list of people I emailed, and some of you, if you want to receive this, email me, and I'm going to send it to you as well. If I don't have your list already. And then this would be things that you can think about, pursue on, talk to others, talk to each other about, and that's it. So, any other last business? We're almost done. Believe me. Okay.
Should someone take a picture?
I'm going to do it. Yeah, okay. Okay, if not, then let's...